No matter where we've been or where we're headed, we all have a story to tell. Today's guest is ultra trail runner Lucy Bartholomew from Australia. It's the second episode of the new Tripod series with co-host Paul Zygowitz, and fittingly, Lucy is currently training for her first Ironman event. We talk about everything from her first 100K, which she ran beside her dad, to the amazing parts of the world that she's had the chance to explore. We also talk about watermelon, peanut butter, and pickles. Yes, you heard that right. Trust me, just listen to the episode and it'll all make sense, I promise. On that note, without further ado, please enjoy Lucy's story.
We're going, right? This is now?
Yeah, we're live.
Oh, we're live. Okay, perfect. So for me, you know, I kind of don't think too much about a race until like 4 months out. I feel like I don't want to spend 12 months, you know, once I finish a race, go, I can't wait to do this again. I'm going to start preparing the day after I just finished. So I kind of give myself like a 4 month focus window. And, you know, that kind of means that I can enter that 4 months at a pretty low fitness compared to where I want to be. And so the first kind of week and a half, maybe 2 weeks, they're all just really easy. It's about building that consistency, that routine, focusing on like getting the basics done really well. So making sure that I'm eating well, sleeping well, recovery, doing the strength work, the yoga that I love to include. And then kind of, you know, the next little bit will be kind of focusing more on, if it's kind of like a long race, more on the endurance side. But then what I've really noticed is that adding in that speed, like when I've been my fittest for 100 miles, I've been running my fastest 5K, which I never thought that they paralleled. I thought they were just completely different sports. But then as I've kind of started working with David Roach, who is an American coach and just loves kind of strides and two sessions a week, and not just long and slow, which I kind of, that's always my fallback. So we kind of start to add in some of that. Again, it's not about doing it perfectly. It's just about doing it consistently and not being defined by any one session. And then as you get closer and closer, it's about being a bit more specific to the race, be that terrain, altitude, heat, making sure to focus on nutrition whilst running. And then probably as we get a bit closer, I start to shift from the physical to more of the mental. So being like an ultra runner, I'd say it's like 60% physical and 40% mental, or even the other way around. And so it's a bit more like visualization and focusing on kind of just staying relaxed and jumping in some races to kind of feel how that feels. And yeah, just to kind of get to that start line and feel like I did everything I could and I can't control anyone else. But yeah, just kind of doing all my little, ticking all my boxes and just doing the best I can.
Yeah. I know Brad's going to want to dive into the mental side of things, but I'm a nerd. So I want to dive into some of the more technical aspects of your training. I actually saw the interview you did with Andy Blow, and I'm curious, has your 5K improved from the 17:27, I think it was, PR that you had? And I'd be a little bit further, I guess, to extend the question. Obviously you start off primarily with more aerobic, like base building stuff. When you start to build in the speed, and then you talked about sort of like finding the edge and then pulling back. So I'm curious, like, where is the edge and when do you know you've hit it?
Yeah, definitely. So my 5K stands at that 17:20, whatever. And that was in the lead up to the year I came third at Western States, which, you know, looking back was kind of my year of being the fittest I'd ever been. I would say that I was unsustainably fit. But it, nonetheless, it was cool to kind of, like you say, find that edge, and I found it. And I tipped over it, which was like, I think, an experience that sometimes you need to go through in order to go, okay, I don't want to do that again. But that's kind of where it is. So, I do just the endurance stuff, the easy stuff, the long runs for about probably 2-3, maybe like a month's worth. I kind of do 3 weeks on, 1 week off. So it'd be 3 weeks of endurance stuff, a week of kind of lowering that mileage back down and just kind of feeling good to then enter into like the next phase, which would be more of adding in some speed and stuff. So it's kind of, yeah, just like a little bit of ebb and flow. I really need to have that balance. I can't just go, go, go. And then, yeah, finding that edge. I think, you know, for me, it used to be like a numbers thing. It would be like, oh, when I run 100 miles a week, that's kind of like my tipping point. And as someone who runs full time, you know, I got nothing else going on. I don't have a job, a family, not much. I got my dad, obviously, and my brothers, but I don't have a family to provide for. You know, I felt like that was a lot. And then what happened was that I started to see other people, other professional athletes doing more. And so I was like, okay, I got to do more. And so in the lead up to 2018 Western States, I maxed out at probably about 100 miles. And that was kind of peak weeks, you know, 20 hours. And that felt like a lot. And then for the next Western States, it was kind of like to be better, I need to do more. And so I was running 130, 140 mile weeks. But like the enjoyment level just wasn't there, and the speed session wasn't there, and the consistency wasn't there. So it's just kind of, it really made me learn, like, I can do more, I can handle it. Like, my body doesn't break, but my headspace is awful. And I think I was, yeah, very much, and I had a terrible race. So I really got nothing out of it except for probably really affected hormones and not really loving the sport as much as I could.
Yeah, so Paul was right. Definitely do want to dive into the headspace that you were talking about, kind of the mental side of things. So you mentioned visualization. What other strategies are you using when you're preparing for a race on the mental side?
Yeah, I would say what I try to do is kind of build up like a toolkit of things. You know, I feel like I adapt to, you know, different situations mean that I kind of fall to different ways to problem solve it, be that through like mantras, be that through just kind of like breath work, be that through like meditation, visualization. So I kind of use like a mixture of all those things. I definitely have things that I repeat to myself. I am a huge fan of visualization and kind of like, yeah, imagining parts of the race and feeling not just the good side and seeing me like visualizing finishing, but visualizing the really hard moments and suffering and realizing that, you know, suffering is a gift and that it's not, that moment doesn't define me, that result doesn't define me, and just kind of zooming out on the whole situation. I feel like, yes, I have this 4-month period where I super zoomed in and want to focus on the race, but it doesn't mean that I've got nothing else in my life. And I think that a mental strategy that I use a lot is kind of that zooming out and being like, this is one day of the year, Lucy. You know, you're trying to prepare for one day to get yourself to perform for however many miles or kilometers. And that's a huge ask. And there's so much that can go wrong and so many things that can, yeah, just not fall into place. And you need to be okay with that. And just focusing on what I can control, which is kind of my effort and my attitude, and everything else I can't really do anything about.
Very stoic of you. I liked what you said. And I think you kind of alluded to it earlier, but you said, you know, the session or the workout doesn't define me, kind of having that long-term perspective. And then you said it again regarding the actual results of the race. And I think that's huge for not getting too concerned with, like you said, external factors that you can't control. So I like that. And then the other thing I just wanted to dive into, you were talking about sustainability and during that year, how you were kind of guns blazing and were extremely fit. But you said it was somewhat unsustainable. What are some things that you're implementing now that are maybe making things more sustainable? You mentioned like recovery and nutrition.
Yeah, so 2018 was kind of, when I say I normally have like a 4-month window, when I got into Western States, it was 6-7 months out. And that was kind of where I've learned this 4-month window from, because I, for 7 months, just hammered to the wall every day. I'd wake up and it was kind of like, what can I do today to be better than someone else on the Western State start line? And it was this kind of competition with myself. And I think it was very ego driven because a lot of people didn't think Western States suited my running style. I was too quote unquote slow for that race. And so I was just like constantly battling, but I was battling with myself. You know, these were all internal thoughts. No, I didn't ever see it on my Instagram or something. And so I just kind of felt like I never really sat back. I would race really hard and then I would just continue to push and push. And then before that race, I think I, between getting into the race in December and racing the Western States 100 in June, I think I raced 8 or 9 times, and like hard every time, and everyone was an ultra because I just felt like I was doing ultras. I needed to do ultras. And in all honesty, I look back and I raced the race of Western States before the race. And I was able to hold on for 100Ks, which I led to. But the reason why for the last 60, I was starting to die was because I'd already run those miles in other races. And so I think that now I'm just trying to be, you know, 10% undercooked is better than 1% overcooked. And that's kind of my mentality going into other races, just being stoked on the start line and ready to dig deep rather than being like, here we go again.
Right. Yeah. How do you sort of control that? Obviously a lot of athletes use things like heart rate, you know, a lot of triathletes are using things like power on the bike. Now I know power on the run is something that is now being introduced with things like stride foot plugs. Like, what are you doing to sort of make sure that you're staying at that 10% undercooked, if you will?
I definitely, you know, I try to be very internal. I do have a lot of the gadgets and gizmos, but I don't rely on them. I think it's been really interesting. I recently got like a Whoop, which has been really fascinating just to see the parallels between like a good session, my sleep, my strain levels. And it's kind of, you know, it pushes out what's a good day to do a session. And it's kind of, you know, at first I was like, oh, please, you know, it doesn't know me.
Like, no way. It's just like black magic, whatever. Yeah. I don't believe it.
Yeah. You know, and it took a while, but you know, it called that yesterday was going to be like a crappy session. And I was halfway through it being like, hit the nail on the head. So I try and be really intuitive and, you know, I know what is too much because I've been there. And I know what I know what I thrive at, and my coach knows me really well. And also just, you know, at the moment with lockdown, I'm living with my dad and he just sees that shift in mood and kind of when I become too focused and when if I need to get other things going on, he's just there to kind of just tap me on the shoulder and be like, you know, what are you doing? You know, this is just running. And yes, it's your job in an essence, but it is something that you love and you don't want to out love that.
Yeah. Just a little bit more on that thread of recovery. So it sounds like you've introduced Whoop to sort of help you be better about recovery. And I know a lot of endurance athletes struggle with that, right? They're very good at, you know, training very hard, but they have trouble sort of pulling it back a little bit. Do you have anything that you like to do for recovery? Like, I mean, it could be broad here. Like, do you like to do sauna? Do you like to do ice baths? I heard you mentioned in a previous interview, you like to give yourself at least one day a week where you're not doing anything. What are some of the stuff, or the things that you like to do, specific to recovery?
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, I always take a Monday off. That's been introduced mainly through David Roach, my coach. He's very much like, one day of like complete rest is just a reset for the body, the mind and everything. And I used to despise that day, but I realized that if you work well and hard for the 6 days after that, you look forward to that day of rest. So I kind of, yeah, now totally embrace it. It's a day that I don't wear running clothes and I'm not Lucy the runner. I'm Lucy everything else. So recovery wise, yeah, I definitely love the sauna. I do that more probably for like my mental headspace because I can sit there and just meditate or sit there and just be quiet and no one talks to me and I can just be me. I have a lot of like, I have the, recovery boots. I have the recovery, the massage gun, but I kind of.
Awesome, by the way, the Normatec boots and the gun. Brad has the gun too, I think, right?
Yeah.
You actually introduced me to the gun, Brad. Which, thank you. Again, it's game changer.
Like, It really is.
It's amazing. Yeah. I think there, you know, it's just, it's so nice to have, you know, all these things that do just make it easier for you. I don't think that they're like 100% essential. Like, I really believe in doing the basics well. And so, you know, the best way to recover is, and you look at the Kenyans, is to eat and to sleep and to put your feet up and sit down. And the good thing about the boots is it makes you sit down. The massage gun makes you sit down. Like, I think you get more of the recovery from the fact that you're not doing anything for a little bit more than like, yeah, the fact that it's like pushing blood through your legs. So yeah, I'm kind of focused on my nutrition, focus on hydration, sleep, resting, just being intuitive and being like, oh, I really feel like I need to stretch and do some yoga or go for a light jog, or yeah, whip out the gadgets and gizmos and get someone else to do it for me.
Awesome. You mentioned you're living with your dad right now. I know that you ran your first 100K with him. I'd love to hear about that experience.
Yeah, definitely. So I saw my dad run his first 100K in 2011 up in the Blue Mountains in Sydney. And I'd done a lot of the training with him. He was really nervous because he was going from road marathon, where you don't have to carry anything. It's on a road. It's very accessible, to 100Ks in the Blue Mountains in Australia, where the gear list is, you know, you need a snake bandage, you need two sets of thermals, you need waterproof clothing. And he was like, oh my God.
I'm scared of all insects, so I would not do well in that situation.
It's so silly. It's like a bandage if you sprain your ankle, but they're like, oh, a snake bandage is important. So I did a lot of the training. I would run next to, or I'd cycle next to him when I started, and then I'd run as I got stronger. And because I was a big part of his build-up, he kind of said, do you want to come and watch the race? And I remember waving goodbye to him and seeing, you know, like 200 people run off this start line. And, you know, I didn't realize that then I was going to have, you know, 20 plus hours as a 15-year-old just to kind of like walk around and do whatever. So I actually did what I'd been doing in training, and I just started following the race course, and I caught up to Dad, and then would run ahead and get to the checkpoints and then run ahead a bit further. And I ended up that day covering, you know, I don't even know how long, I didn't have a watch or anything, but a fair distance. And what I saw in that race was that the sport of ultra running, there's just people of all shapes and sizes. There's the fast and the you know, very talented trail runners at the front. Then you got kind of the middle of the pack who are, you know, usually like moms and dads and people with jobs and, you know, just this was like their big experience for the year. And then you had people at the back of the pack, and they were the ones that fascinated me the most, because they just had like a can of Coke in one hand, a handful of chips, and they were just like walking through the woods and call and being like, oh, you know, we're in sport. And I was like, it's like a big kids party with like a bit of jogging to get to each like aid station of party. And so when I saw Dad finish, I wrote to every race director in Australia for 100Ks, and one came back that said they'd let a then 16 or 15-year-old run. And yeah, so we got to stand on the start line together of the Surf Coast Century, which is on the coastline of Victoria. And it was an amazing experience. It was really challenging in that before I even started, there was a lot of criticism about whether a 15-year-old, and especially a female 15-year-old, should be able to run 100Ks, or yeah, all the ramifications that would come from it. I'd be stunted in growth. I wouldn't be able to go to school and learn. Like, just, it was just so unknown. And I truly believe that it was from a place of concern and like, yeah, love. It was just kind of like, we don't know this, she shouldn't do this. And like, for me, it was kind of the most pivotal point in my career. It was the point that I had to be like, I could not do this, just make everyone happy and stop this kind of like back and forth of if I should be able to do it, or I can do this. And like, I stood on the start line with my dad, and he kind of said, you know, Lucy, there's a lot of people out there that want to pull you out because they want to be right. So you've got to smile your way through this 100K, kind of as a middle finger to them all, just to kind of say, like, I love what I'm doing. I'm doing this because I love it. I'm not here to be the youngest or the first person across the line and to run 100Ks, but I'm doing it to spend a day with my dad and to achieve something that, yeah, I see other people achieve and think it's something that I can do.
That's incredible. That's awesome.
Yeah, super interesting.
Yeah. So you've kind of always had that mentality of, you know, blazing your own trail and not necessarily listening to the criticism and kind of thinking for yourself. You still have that mindset today? And what are some other kind of instances that things like that have come about where people are saying, oh, you should slow down, or you should, you know, you shouldn't get involved in X, Y, and Z, and you persevere through?
Yeah, I feel like it's kind of been, it's a constant for me, because I think the way I am is that I always want to push boundaries, right? Like 100Ks wasn't far enough. So then I did a multi-stage desert race. That wasn't far enough. I did 100 miles. That wasn't far enough. Recently, I ran 140 miles. And it was actually in that 140 miles where I kind of just had to check myself and be like, you know, you can go further and further and further, but I feel like I'm doing it to chase something that I'm never going to achieve, right? The further you run, it doesn't mean that you're going to become more enlightened or you're going to suddenly have everything worked out in life. So I think that for, there's lots of instances where people are like, you shouldn't do that. That's not what you should do. You should do this. And I think that like probably one that's like not running related is that like, I don't drink alcohol or I don't drink coffee. And it's two things that like as an Australian and especially as a Melbourne person, you know, people are just like, you don't do that. Like what, how do you talk to other people? What do you do with your mornings and then your evenings? And I think it's one of those things, you know, I constantly get, because trail running and drinking beers and trail running and having morning coffee is just like everyone, we all revolve around it. And I think that I've had to be, you know, from the very beginning, I've never had either of those things, and to be kind of like, this is who I am. This is the direction I want to go. This is what I want to do. And like, I won't be peer pressured into doing anything but what I want to do. And, you know, if I think if you do anything confidently, if you say anything confidently, people kind of be like, oh, wow, you know, like, cool. She's like dead set focused on that. And that's awesome to see.
Yeah. Yeah. It's super interesting. I mean, I think a lot of people just kind of like fall into that mode. It's kind of like, you know, you get to college and it's like, you know, you drink in college, and it's kind of just like everybody just does that. But the coffee thing, definitely for an endurance person, I feel like that's the really weird thing. But yeah, I'm like a caffeine fiend. I don't drink myself, but I'm like super into coffee. So, I couldn't get up in the morning without it, but that's super, super respectable. I was curious, you mentioned the 140 mile race. Was that, what race was that? Was that Blackwater or?
No, so it wasn't a race. It was during lockdown in Australia. Oh. So it was an FKT attempt on the, it's called the Larapinta Trail out in the Northern Territory in the desert.
Okay. Nice. I was just going to ask, like, as far as like races coming down the pike, do you have anything planned out? And I know like Brad and I were talking about this earlier. It sounded like earlier on in your career, you were kind of just like going after races, like just doing as much racing as possible. What's kind of like your approach now? Like, are you picking like one or two races a year, or yeah, just curious to kind of learn your thought process around, race schedule.
Yeah, definitely. I think if you look at my resume, you know, when I started running back in 2012, there's lots of races and there's lots of first places. And I think that it's really like, you've got to look at that, because everyone's like, you're so successful. And I was like, I was the only one in those races, you know, and especially a female in the under 18s, like no one is doing it. You know, they created these for me. And so I think that for me, when I started, I was doing all these races and having this success. So getting this kind of confidence and ego boosts every time. And, you know, it really filled me up, and it was great, and I loved it. And me and Dad weren't doing it for the, you know, we've run together most of the time, which means that he would have been like first female, which is so funny because he's way back, you know, but you know, we used it as a way to explore and to get training in, and it was really cool. What's shifted since then is the level of the sport. As a female, as an ultra runner, it's just I want to, when I want to stand on a, when I stand on start line, I want to like run hard and I want to empty the tank. And you just can't do that easily anymore. You know, I'm super respectful of the distances, the terrain and the competition, but I don't want to put out a half-assed performance. And so I just kind of definitely like taken a step back from just being super, yeah, just prevalent with my racing and instead really chasing what sets my heart on fire and instead, yeah, zooming in on that and kind of like giving that the best of my ability rather than just doing that cycle of kind of taper, race, recover, taper, race, recover. I want blocks of time. And that's what kind of what COVID taught me is I don't really need the racing. I just love the cycle of training. I love getting up, getting at it, going to bed. You know, it's just, I don't need to put on a bib and prove anything to anyone nor myself. I just, yeah, I just love moving my body and challenging myself. And like that FKT attempt, you don't need a race to do that.
Yeah. That's so cool.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask about just COVID in general, how it's like impacted your training. And, you know, it obviously is great for not only physical health, but mental health to kind of give you something to place your efforts towards and plan towards. But you kind of you answered it before I got to it. I'm interested, you were mentioning how, especially when you were starting out, you might be one of the only kind of like young guns out there in a lot of these races. Did you have inspirations, you know, people in the sport that you looked up to that were like veterans in the sport that, like kind of took them under your wing type of thing and helped you out at all?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's really interesting. Like, I think when people ask this question, they expect like, you know, big names like, oh, you know, well, maybe not the taking under the wing, but like inspiring. And they think of, you know, like Killian or Emily, which Emily has been like in a massive, she was always my hero. She was my screensaver on my phone for so long. And, you know, she was the first person that when I joined Solomon kind of reached out and ended up actually coaching me and looking after me and mentoring me, which is so amazing. But I think I really felt the most inspiration and most kind of being looked after by the Australian running community. You know, and that's just like the everyday jogger. It was never kind of the first person that inspired me. Like I said, when I watched my dad, it was the last person. It was the person that's like pushing all day to, yeah, they're not going to stand on a podium. They're not going to win their age group or whatever, a prize, but they're going to get it done. And like, just to see them cross the finish line, achieve something that they, you know, they've overcome so many challenges to achieve is always just like the most inspiring thing. And they were always the one that would then talk to me as a 15-year-old and kind of, you know, with the most sparkle in their eye about what they just endured. So I feel like I always got such a great insight into what happens on the trail because I didn't hear the super glamorized, perfect person at the front of the field's recount. I heard the person at the back. And I think, you know, my dad always taught me to talk to that person and just congratulate them and make sure they feel valued and to kind of, yeah, to find out how their day went because someday that'll be my day. And like, that's like an awesome thing to kind of like be inspired by because I kind of look forward to that.
Yeah.
It's
amazing. I do Ironman triathlon and that's always something that's like super inspiring. Like, yeah, I mean, you kind of feel bad when you're like walking, you know, you're like walking your bike away and like people are still, you know, they still got a bunch left to do on the run and stuff, but it's just like, it's super inspiring to see somebody finish. And yeah, it's so inspiring.
So I'm signed up for an Ironman.
Are you really? That was actually going to be something I was going to ask, like, do you kind of like get outside of endurance? And I know you do some like running and cycling and surfing and stuff like that, but this is super cool. What Ironman are you going to do? When is it?
Yeah. So I signed up for Busselton, which is in December 5th.
You're going to crush it. You're going to crush it.
Oh, I am so terrified. Give me 100 miles any day, one sport, no problem. It's just been so fast. I mean, it's been really hard with lockdown because the pool's closed and you can't cycle outside of 5K radius. And so I've kind of just been running a lot. And I pick up my bike on Monday and I got my wetsuit. And I'm just like, I have all the gear and no idea at this point. You know, like, I'm going to look great, but I'm not going to be very good.
Oh, that's so cool. Would you go forward with the bike?
So Ironman are sponsoring this. So we're kind of making like a series on it. Ironman's kind of has bought a lot of trail races. You know, they've bought Ultra Trail Australia, Tarawera, UTMB. So, and there was a bit of backlash with Ironman entering the sport of trail running. And I think what they want to do is kind of just build bridges. And I think they see me as a bridge to that. And they kind of reached out, and because I couldn't get to Western States this year and I can't get to UTMB with travel restrictions, they kind of said, do you want to do an Ironman? And I was like, this is something I've wanted to do, but I thought I'd do it when I like was too injured to run that far or something. And it just kind of all fell into place. And then they thought, let's make a series on it. Let's go from trail runner to Ironman. And so I've got a Ventum bike.
That is awesome. Yeah, it's a sweet bike. And I am going to be cheering you on big time for that. And
definitely I'm going to be hitting you up for questions.
Yeah, no, seriously, anything I can do to help, I am. I'd love to. That's so cool.
How many have you done?
So I focus more on the 70.3. I'm actually trying to get my pro card right now. My initial goal, like getting into the sport, was to do an Ironman. I was just like, by the time I'm 30, I'm going to do an Ironman. I quit drinking, and it was kind of like something that kept me busy. So I haven't done a full yet, but I've done probably 14 halves at this point. The half is a really fun distance, but it's like you're riding the knife's edge, right? You're at that lactate threshold for, you know, an extended period of time. So I'm looking forward to getting to longer distances because they come to do a lot better. But I think you're really, really going to enjoy it. And obviously you have the mental state for it. So you're going to crush it at that.
I can't get over the run cycle to run feeling. Yeah. It just, I feel like a giraffe on ice skates.
That's all it takes. It's you're going to do some bricks. Tim Don is a big advocate of like the soft brick, where you'll do, you know, a nice bike, like a couple hours on the bike, and then, you know, take 10 minutes or so, like go grab a drink or something like that, and then get off and start running. Doesn't have to be right after, but you definitely want to mix in at least one brick. And as long as you're doing that, like, you know, let's say 4 or 5 times before the race, you'll get rid of those like rubbery legs that you typically get after, which is like so weird. You're like running and you're like, you know, just feeling like Gumby, like running down the road. But yeah, that feeling goes away. And you're always running faster than you think you are too, which is like the weird thing.
I can't believe it. I get off a bike and I'm like running 4-minute Ks, which is something that I do when I do park run, you know? And but then I hit the biggest wall you have ever seen. And I feel like I'm running, just going for a walk. It's so slow.
Yep. Yeah. Just get your calories in on the bike. That's like the biggest piece of advice. And obviously, you know, you have the discipline as far as hydration and nutrition and things like that. Just make sure you don't get behind on that and you'll be fine.
Oh, I'm going to have to hit you up for questions. Yeah, I saw the Iron Man symbol in the background for you.
Yeah.
So I was oh, I need to talk to him.
So yeah, you started to talk about the different disciplines a little bit. Which do you think is going to be, obviously running, you have that background for sure, between swimming and biking, which do you think is going to like pose the most difficulty for you, or which are you enjoying the most right now?
Yeah, I think for me, the swimming is no problem, but it's also a very small part of the race. So I think the biggest thing is going to be the cycling. I've not ridden a bike all that much, especially not like one of the real triathlon Ironman bikes. So a little bit lighter and very kind of, Busselton's really, really flat. So you're kind of sitting in that kind of just pushing watts for 4 or 5 at 6 hours. And so that's like really scary and going to be really challenging for me. So when I pick up my bike and I can finally get on it, I'll let you know if it overtakes anything else. But I'm really loving, really love swimming. I find swimming just so meditative. I can cut laps, be in the ocean. It just feels... it feels so meditative. It feels very kind of like, cause you're in that underwater world. No one talks to you. You can't have your phone on you. You don't have music playing. I feel like with running, it's so second nature that I can like Instagram as well as listen to podcasts as well as like do all these things on the run. And I almost find myself removing myself from the actual present moment, but with swimming, it's something that like, yeah, you got to breathe at some point. So you got to remember you're there.
Yeah, it kind of forces you into that state of mind and almost into like a flow state, if you will.
Totally.
You mentioned music and podcasts. What's on your playlist right now for music?
Oh, for music, I'm someone who because I'm quite competitive. I try not to listen to music that's like got like a huge super beat, because otherwise I try and beat the beat, which is like not good. So I listen to really chilled out music. People listen to it, like my dad hates the music I listen to because it's just like real acoustic, very indie, very just like guitars and stuff, but it chills me out. So I'm listening to, I can do Taylor Swift, I can do a fan of Ed Sheeran, but I can also do kind of like that kind of more indie stuff of like, there's a really good guy in Australia, Gordian. I love, I can't even think of them off the top of my head now. Angus and Julia Stone, Xavier Rudd. Yeah, I'm kind of just like a super chilled out person with music.
Yeah, I like Xavier Rudd a lot. Coastline Journey and Come Let Go are like the two that I'm thinking off the top of my head, those songs.
There we go, yeah.
I feel left out now. I got to go look this person up. I don't know
you guys got to.
I do like the chill stuff, though.
Your stuff for a while, all right?
Yeah.
I'll talk to Bradley about music and Paul about Iron Man.
There you go.
Yeah, no, Xavier Rudd's definitely got some good stuff, but that makes sense. So you're not you don't really have like high BPM, so you're not like your cadence isn't really getting messed up. It's just, you know, kind of background for you. That makes sense.
Yeah, I don't really use music when I do kind of like sessions or anything, but I recently got some of the Aftershock headphones. Do you know the ones that they sit like on your, not in your ear, just on your bone?
Yeah, right.
And it's like life-changing. Now I can finally, like, I used to have to always wear a buff to hold headphones in because it did my head in, and now I think I could actually probably listen to like, yeah, higher tempo when I'm doing like an interval session. So I'm looking forward to that.
Awesome.
Yeah, just curious, how do you, so it sounds like you like them. I was always like, because they actually make those, I think, for swimming too, where yeah, it just uses it, like the, yeah, you're basically like your skeletal structure to send the sound waves through. I thought that was pretty interesting, but I've never tried them. So it sounds like they work pretty well.
Oh, they are game changing. I think I've tried every headphone on the market. I thought I had like an odd shaped ear or something wrong with me. But these ones, the best thing is on the bike, because you can hear the traffic because there's nothing blocking your ears. But then because it's going through that, like through that bone, you still hear the music, but it's kind of sometimes like background if there's a car near you, but then it becomes foreground when it's quiet.
Yeah.
So I got nothing bad to say about them. Love them.
Yeah. That actually brings up just a quick question. Do you do any training indoors? Like, I know you mentioned you're doing like a lot of volume. Like, do you ever do any treadmill running? And now that you're doing Ironman, are you doing any, you know, any riding on Zwift? Definitely make sure to follow you on Zwift if you are. Just curious.
I don't do a whole lot on a treadmill. I usually use the treadmill as kind of like a convenience thing when I'm traveling. Like if I'm staying in a hotel, it's just easy. I am hoping to do more training on the indoor bike. I haven't got the whole setup yet. I think that from what I hear, just for like one safety, with riding your bike, it's better to be indoors. And also I live in the Yarra Valley, which is like pretty up and down roads, and because Busselton's so flat, that way I can just sit in a gear and just go nowhere but be in that kind of same position and that same feeling. So yeah, it's definitely on the cards.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, you know, when you're riding outside, you probably don't have to deal with like a whole lot of stoplights and things like that, but yeah, it definitely makes it a little bit easier to execute on a session, especially if you're doing something like higher end. We need to push out a bunch of watts and then, you know, drop down. It definitely makes it easier. And to your point, it's definitely safer. Nothing like being out on the open road, you know, just hair whipping through, or, you know, wind whipping through your hair. That's cool.
So I wanted to kind of go backwards a little bit. You mentioned earlier in our conversation about, you know, your love for yoga and like stretching and how that's helped you in your sport. So I'd like to kind of hear some more about that, how often you're doing that, and what the benefits have been for you.
Yeah, definitely. So for me, yoga is, and when I say yoga, sometimes I mean a very stretched version of the word. I think I take that word lightly. You know, I think it's, yoga for me is like a state of mind, and it's kind of, you know, just putting aside time to either just like sit on a mat. I mean, you could go and lay in Savasana, which is just lying on your back pose, and you can go, I'm doing yoga, but fall asleep. So for me, yoga is something I do probably, I mean, again, it's pretty intuitive, but I probably do it 4 or 5 times a week because I'm not very like regimented and it's not like a big routine and strenuous. I pretty much end my day every day with it. And for me, it's about listening and feeling my body. So I think that what it does is it really helps with like injury prevention. It just kind of allows you to feel one side of the body, the other side of the body, compare it, spend a bit of time just kind of sitting in uncomfortable stretches that really open up parts of the body, that kind of yin yoga. But yeah, it's just something that for me, it's probably more of a mental health thing than a physical. I love the idea of, cool, I'm just going to move my body and do some like downward dogs, do some child poses, and yeah, just kind of be in tune with everything. Cause then I can kind of then take that feeling and then apply it to like, okay, if I'm a little tight on my right side, then like I'm going to be changing the way I start to run if I don't address this. So it's more of like an injury prevention, a recovery, and then just like a mental health and emotional letdown. Gotcha.
Yeah, I know Paul likes his lacrosse ball and PVC pipe, so that's what he turned me on to.
My way of avoiding that.
Avoiding that PVC pipe pain.
It works the best. I personally like, and it's cheaper than the regular foam rollers too, right? It's a deal. I'm a thrifty guy. What can I say? I'm just curious, like how often do you do yoga? Is it like a once a week thing? Is it pretty regimented in your routine, or is it more like just kind of when you're feeling like you need to do it?
Kind of more when I feel like I need to do it. I definitely probably, you know, I have my mat laid out all the time. So I probably sit on it every day and do something, whether that be watch TV from it. But I definitely kind of, yeah, probably I would say definitely 4 times a week, but sometimes 6 or 7.
Are you doing any like strength work, like lifting and that type of thing? I'm just interested as far as like injury prevention, that type of thing, what you're doing.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm really lucky in that my dad works at some of the gyms here in Melbourne. And so he brings home a new piece of equipment every time he seems to finish a shift. And he just loves free stuff. So he just, you know, he comes home with a roller and
That's
yeah. So yeah, I do. So it's all in the garage. We have a pretty nice setup. So I have all the gear, and again, I don't probably use it to its full potential. I have really kind of like during COVID, definitely, and during lockdown, used the gym a lot because I could only run for an hour a day. I would then go into the gym, and it's really been nice to see kind of like that shift, because usually I don't have enough time or I'm traveling, but now I've really started to realize how important that kind of stuff is and how much stronger you can be. And you don't need to pound miles to be a strong runner. You can mimic a lot of those movements, and you can get a lot of stability and balance and strength from doing some pretty basic exercises. So yeah, I definitely have been trying to do it probably twice a week, really. I did have like it scheduled down for like three times, but I definitely found that when I started it, it definitely affects my running like the next day, or I just had to be a bit careful about not overloading, because like you probably notice I'm either go hard or go home.
Do you still run with your dad, or do you have like any workout partners or anyone in the area that you kind of like crush sessions with, or is it more so just yourself the majority of the time?
Yeah, when I'm home, because usually I'm away for 8 months of the year, and then when I'm back home, I usually just kind of want to kind of sit back and just chill and spend time with my family. So I don't have really people that I run with around here, which has been really kind of hard, because it's been 2 years now of being in the Yarra Valley and with my dad. So I do run with him, but very much on our easy runs. We have to be very careful of the day we run together, because I think I'm always looking back and being like, are you okay, Dad? And he's like, I'm fine, I'm just slower. we've then got to live together, so we've got to pick our moments. But my brother, he doesn't live here, but he lives quite locally, and he's getting into running, and he's a really fast runner, so I do train with him as a great way to see him and catch up. But yeah, usually, you know, because I travel and I try and immerse myself in those communities, I spend a lot of time with people. They're showing me new routes and doing sessions with me, that then when I come home, I just really want to be do my own thing. But yeah, I definitely think that like for the Ironman, what I'm most excited about is kind of that community aspect. You know, you've got like the big bunch rides and doing the runs, and everyone, you know, groups that go open water swimming together. I think that'll be really good for me. Just to kind of, yeah, I think to be a sustainable runner, you can't just do it on your own. A sustainable athlete, really. And I kind of think that that's where I really fell apart when I started to struggle a lot, was that I was so focused that I was like, no one's doing the session I'm doing, no one's going fast enough, no one's doing enough hills, that I just wouldn't do it with anyone. But I think that, you know, it's like they say, you can go fast alone, but you go far together. And that's kind of what I need to focus on now.
I like that. So you mentioned you like to sort of immerse yourself in the different communities. Obviously, haven't done a whole lot of traveling recently, but like, where were your favorite places to travel to? And did you, like, you know, after race, did you spend time there? Yeah, just curious to learn a little more.
Yeah, so I'd say, you know, places that feel like second home to me are California and Colorado in America. Going there for Western States 2 years. You know, when I first landed there in 2018, the race kind of like athlete manager, he got some random person to pick me up from the airport, and they were like, so where are you staying? I was like, I don't know yet. And I ended up staying in he kicked his daughter out of her room, and I was staying there for 2 weeks, and they became like this family to me. And it was just an incredible, like, they all just kind of looked after me. So I'd say that, like, that Auburn community in California, and then I went from there to Hard Rock, to Silverton, and so that Colorado family definitely feels like home. When I finished Western States, I have flown to Hawaii and then flown to Mexico for the 2 years. And that's just so I can surf, and just so I can really not put runners on.
I used to surf, not so much anymore, but like, I love surfing.
Yeah, I started when I was younger. I used to surf so much, and it was like, I want to be a professional surfer. Yeah. And I never in a million years thought I would be a runner, because I was like, not a land animal.
Yeah.
So, but it's such a perfect way to recover from 100 miles or any race, is to hit the coastline, to just walk around barefoot and in your bathers, eat acai bowls, and just kind of surf the days away.
Yeah, it's really I got to start doing it more. We didn't have any like great white sharks by us, but recently they've like come back, so I'm not saying that I'm scared, but I'm a little nervous to get in the water, or at least hang out in the water like I used to. Obviously, that probably sounds crazy to you guys, because, you know, you have to deal with that stuff on a regular basis. But
yeah, we've got Pitcher in the background. I'd be
terrified. I know. Well, it's Jaws. It's the which was filmed on an island like pretty close by. It was filmed on Martha's Vineyard, so it's close to home. But yeah, there's just something about surfing, kind of, especially in today's day and age where everybody's like go 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 and everything's like so planned out. There's just something so organic about just kind of like waiting for a wave, right? Not necessarily like any wave. It's like waiting for the perfect, you know, waiting for the perfect wave kind of thing.
Yeah, and I think I love that it's the sustainability of it, because like you can't surf every day. There's not swell every day. So you kind of like, you have to be super flexible and fluid and be like, oh, I was going to surf today, but there's nothing to surf. Yeah. Whereas like running in Australia, there's no off season, you know, snow falls in the mountains, but you can run everywhere else. And so there's no off season. So that's what I kind of love about it, is that, it's not something you can kind of write out a training plan for and expect to fulfill every session. You have to be like, oh, there's no surf, I might just go paddle around or do some stand-up paddle boarding, or maybe I will run today instead. I love it.
That's a really good point. I never thought about that, because I did run into that issue. Like when I got into surfing when I was younger, I was like wanting to surf all the time. And to your point, it's like there's just, you know, you could show up to the beach, but it's just dead flat. There's nothing there.
Totally.
Yeah, I like that. It's like you said, you have to be able to just be fluid and flexible, kind of adapt and evolve, and then on any given notice also be able to drop everything and go full steam ahead, which seems like you like to do. So you mentioned acai bowls. I gotta ask about the watermelon story. That's like we have to touch on that. We need the full background.
Yeah. it all started in South Africa at Ultra Trail Cape Town in 2017. So I went there and I was doing the 100K race, and in the first 10 kilometers, I took my first gel and it kind of all came up, plus, you know, breakfast and the dinner before. And I was, you know, that overwhelming feeling of like, my race is gone. Like if I don't get calories, I don't move fast at least. And I got to the aid station, and the only thing that I really like wanted or thought that I could stomach would be watermelon. And I had it and I was like, this is good, this is staying. And so what I would do is I would run into these aid stations and I would pick up, you know, 3 or 4 pieces, and I'd put it in my pack and then down my, like on my skirt, so I could eat as much as I could. I knew that it's not very calorie dense. And then I'd run out of the aid station with a few pieces in each hand, one in my mouth. Like it was ridiculous. I looked so stupid, but I was like, this is what's working. This is my solution to my problem.
Yep.
And, you know, photographers are always around or just outside of the aid stations. So all my photos for Ultra Trail Cape Town are of me just like, you know, 10 pieces deep of watermelon, like looking seriously obsessed. And I, between that and then I ended up then going to the Black Doctor Coke, and I was just having the sugar hits from both. Anyway, I finished the race. I set a course record. I won the race. I had a great day. And I was on national TV in Australia. And usually they have, you know, like the banner of, and they might say like Lucy Bartholomew, Ultra Trail Cape Town champion. But for some reason, they put Lucy Bartholomew, known for her excessive amounts of watermelon eating. And everyone just started, like all these new people started following me and being like, how much did you eat? Like, you know, do you eat the skin as well? And I was like, I don't know this. This is like, I ran 100 days.
Watermelon subculture out there.
So it kind of became this symbol, and then I was like, well, I'll just take it and run. And you know, we came up with some t-shirts and a bit of fun, and now wherever I go, whenever I land anywhere, like, people come bearing watermelons, you know. They're kind of like, oh, when I landed in like New Caledonia, they were like, yes, we have the best watermelon, let us show you. I'm like, oh, so okay. But I need to change my fruit, you know. I think I need to switch it up so I can get some different fruit.
Yeah, I'm feeling left out now.
Don't ever buy another watermelon again in a new town. You'll always be served well.
Yeah.
I didn't know watermelon was so diverse either. Like, I thought it was just kind of like the one type.
Oh, no. Like, South Africa.
Mind blown.
Yeah, there's like yellow ones. There's long ones. Yeah, I've learned a lot about it.
Oh, that's so funny. I did just want to quickly ask about, because I think nutrition just in general for, like, I know it's something I personally struggled with. And, you know, obviously it's incredibly personal, right? Everybody's gut's different. But how, I guess, have you cracked the nutrition nut, and what have you found that's worked for you?
Yeah, no, I've definitely not cracked it. I feel like every time, like, you know, I look back at like Western states that went really well, and I think, oh, I just repeat that. But, you know, climate changes, terrain changes, effort changes, and it all just blows up in your face. Yeah. So it's probably one of my favorite things about the sport is that constant, just like problem solving aspect, and nutrition is definitely one of them. So I follow a plant-based diet. So I eat vegan. So no animal products. And then when I'm racing, I use spring energy gels, which are just like pureed normal foods. I found that when I was having kind of those real like maltodextrin, real syrupy things, my stomach was like taking it in and being like, what is this? We never have this. Whereas spring energy uses like a base of fruit and rice and nuts and seeds, and it's a little more sustainable for the long stuff. Having said that, like, I look at like an Ironman and stuff where, you know, I think that it'll be nice to have that kind of, yes, a bit of a sugary hit, and a little bit more efficient on it. But yeah, I feel like, I mean, I've eaten some of the most random things while running. I've eaten sushi in China. I've eaten pickles and peanut butter somewhere else. I'll just shove anything in. And if it comes out, it doesn't, like, I don't get rattled by it. I don't think I've lost all my energy. I just think I've wiped the slate clean, and now we can start again. So yeah, I'm kind of like, when it's race day, it's like party day, like, get involved, find what works for you. And yeah, don't be afraid to try something new. And yeah, I think the body's pretty amazing the way it just bounces back after letting it out.
Yeah. Pickles and peanut butter, I've definitely explored that combination. A little sodium and protein, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, it's like satay.
That is a great combo.
I do love pickles. Pickles are delicious. I like salt just in general too. Like, I think I'm just like, I'm a super salty sweater. So like, I don't know, I guess, I like anything with salt on it.
I got a salt test done way back, but apparently your salt levels like don't change ever. It doesn't matter where you live or whatever.
Did you get that through Precision?
Yeah.
I was going to do that, but they only do it like in certain locations, and I was actually in Toronto, and I was going to like meet up with a guy, but it just like didn't work out. And then, I stopped going there for work. So I never ended up getting it done, but I like really want to get it done.
Oh, you should get it done. Once you know, I feel like for me, I mean, I found like he said I've got one of the lowest salt losses he's ever seen. And that's probably why I race well at Western States. I've never cramped. And like, I've never really loved like electrolytes. And I think it's because like, I've never like fully needed them.
Yeah.
But that's that peace of mind. Like, I feel like I can go into hot climates and just be like, I know I'm okay. Yeah. And I think it'd be so interesting, like, for you, and especially like with your triathlon and Ironman, because it just means you can be so much more precise about, you know, how your body will respond and what you can kind of do to help it.
Yeah, no, I need to get it done. And I know for a fact, I think it's like 0 to 2,000 milligrams an hour is like what the average, or what the breath that you can sweat. I know I'm at that upper end. But yeah, I just need to get it done. So I'm going to get it done, Lucy.
Set on podcast.
committed
out there for the world to hear. Awesome. Well, yeah. Anything? Do you have anything else, Paul? I feel like we touched on a lot of good stuff. Do you have?
Yeah.
Last
one. I think we're. Do you want to do? We sometimes do like sort of like five like rapid kind of off the cuff like short answer questions. Do you want to do that, Brad? Or
sure.
Cool. All right. Well, on the surfing, shortboard or longboard?
Longboard.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I'm surprised. I thought you were going to say shortboard. But
no, you can like walk up and down waves.
Yeah. I like it. Sort of like Desert Island question, favorite movie, or maybe you can give me like favorite three or something. But if you're stuck on an island, like what are you taking with you for movies?
Oh man, that's tough. I would take... Oh, I can't do this quickly.
It probably changes over time too.
It does, but I would watch something like, I could watch like Alex Honnold's Free Solo documentary, like on
the beat. That's rad, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a big Doc fan. I like the Doc. That movie, I swear to God, when I was watching that movie, I was sitting there and like my hands were sweating. I was getting secondhand anxiety just watching that guy climb.
Yeah, he posts on Instagram, and every time I still watch it, I'm like, is he going to make it? Like, you just watched his story. He's fine.
Like, yeah, you know he makes it. Oh, my God. It really is. It's so incredible. It really is. That's commitment right there.
This isn't a quick one, but it just reminded me when you were talking about the documentary, you mentioned that series with Iron Man. When can we expect to see those start to roll out?
Yeah, well, now that we can finally, so we're filming the bike piece on Monday when I pick up my bike and get the bike fit done. Awesome. So then that should go out then like the previous week after that. And then they should be a bit more consistent as things open up. And then the other documentary we've got coming is the half hour documentary on the Lara Pinta FKT that I did. And so that should be coming out in the next month or so, which is going to be super. It's super, super good. I can't wait to share it.
Very cool. That's awesome when you're like proud of something and you're just ready to share it. That like feels the best. It's the best energy, especially on the actual drop day. Yeah, it feels amazing. So we'll definitely be looking out for both of those.
Exactly. Thank you.
I always like to ask this question because half the reason why I exercise in the first place is because I love food. And so after the race, what's the first thing that you eat? Or like, what's like the, yeah, your sort of go-to indulgence?
So Mexican's my dream, is my favorite cuisine. And I could do that in any form, burrito, nachos, quesadilla, any of that just makes me super, super happy. But post-race, dude, I'll take anything. Sans meat.
Okay. There's a place I like to go mountain biking. It's called Kingdom Trails in northern Vermont. And at the base of the mountain, it's called Mike's Tiki Bar. And then they have this like burrito truck. And that's like one of my favorite post-race things as well. But Brad knows this. I go with a McFlurry usually. That's like my
You can get that anywhere.
I know. That's why. Because you can get it anywhere. I love ice cream too, so.
Oh, awesome.
What about you, Brad? What would you have?
Well, actually, Paul has gotten me into this whole mess a little bit. I signed up for my first half marathon in October, so nowhere near what you guys are talking about. But for me, it's significant. Yeah, for me, it's
definitely awesome. Significant.
Yeah, so I'm also a big, I like Mexican food a lot. Burritos are a go-to, but I love buffalo chicken pizza, and I have a feeling that I will probably have to order one for that finish line. Have the delivery guy waiting. Buffalo chicken pizza with some ranch. Yeah, I think that's going to be the go-to.
I'll get you Nick's Pizza, Brad. That's our hometown pizza spot is Nick's.
Go. Get you that's at the finish line. I'll be there in no time.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you very much for doing this. This was a ton of fun. Learned a lot as always. And yeah, I'm excited to see all the stuff that you're working on. And I'm sure Paul will be a wealth of knowledge on the triathlon front. He definitely knows his stuff. So he's a good person to talk to.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, and all the best with your half marathon. And Paul, I'll be hitting you up. And yeah, it's been awesome fun. What a great way to start my Thursday.
Yeah,
bright and early, right?
Yeah, we don't have coffee, but this conversation is a little energy boost for sure.
Yeah, good stuff. Well, yeah, Lucy, thanks so much for hopping on. We're really looking forward to watching your future success, and I am going to be glued to the TV for the Ironman stuff. So you're going to crush it.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. All right. I'll speak to you soon.
Adios.
Have a good one.
Bye. Bye.